So this is another Florentine picture by Piero di Cosimo around 1490, after 1487, because we know that in 1487 a giraffe was brought to Florence. So when you come upon a painting, I mean, we've mentioned this in class a couple of times, what do you usually do? Well, you come up to the painting, you scan the painting briefly, look carefully and with great attention to every line in the label, and then just check whether everything is more or less in accord with that, and then exit to the next picture and repeat. That's an unfortunate thing to do. Another unfortunate thing to do that we usually do, we often do this, is we try instantly to find out the meaning, to get the substance out, right? So imagine that you've just sat down to dinner, your plate is in front of you. As soon as you sit down, you're straining to get the nutrients out before you've even picked up the knife and the fork. You know, that's not how it's done. It's pointless. You need to eat the food. Same with the painting. You need to eat the painting. Most basic rule of interpretation of art, don't start by thinking about the meaning. Don't start by thinking about the meaning. Entirely premature. Eat the painting the way you eat a meal, right? Bit by bit, without hurting the meal toward nutrition. The nutrients are going to come up. Take another analogy. Think in terms of human relations. Treat the painting like a new acquaintance. Abide with it. Don't try to get the goods on this character in the first minute of conversation. Here's another good piece of advice. Start by saying you don't know what a painting means. Right? Try to be the last person to get to the finish line. Humble yourself. Be humbly ignorant and abide with the picture and find out. Think of it as a conversation. Let your conversation partner speak first. Now, what does a painting say? First, there are words. There are words that are said. What are the words? Man, horse, giraffe, right? And put them together and you'll hear the sentences. Man on a white horse, holding a whip. And then you put the sentences together, right? And you get the idea. But don't miss the emphases, right? In speaking, you emphasize by putting something on a pedestal. In this case, it's the center of the picture or some other part that's singled out for attention. Shining a light on it, repeating it, underlining it, right? They're things that are done. Don't miss the emphases. So let me start you. Think of this as a conversation. Let your partner speak first. This painting says a man on a white horse with a cloak about him, a whip in his hand, leaning over to speak to another man whom he seems to know. Now, carry on in that fashion. What else does it say? Yes, making horseshoes. Exactly.
Looks like that people over there stopping for rest. That's with the guy rubbing his feet or something.
Yeah, a man rubbing his feet. A family, probably. Someone sleeping in a certain posture. What else is happening? Well, they're building a structure, right? Which looks like it could be a house. Yeah, what do you notice about the dress of these people? There almost isn't any, right? These people don't have, and that's something to think about for a minute. So at the level of actions and events, right? That's one of the things we're looking for. What do you see? You see two men making horseshoes, a sleeping man in a posture that suggests he might be cold. A man holding his foot, he's naked, unshod, a clothed woman. People building a house. How are they building a house? Well, they've got tools, right? They've got a saw. They've got kind of a thing to batter the post into place. They've got hammers. They're building with tools. Animals.
Kind of animals. Domesticated animals?
No, not really. Camel, you know, it's a camel off to the background, but a giraffe. I don't think giraffes have ever been domesticated. Now, if that's what has been said, think about what you have been told. There's a thread running through much of that. Not easy to see it, maybe, but there is a thread running through much of that. What is it? Work is, yes, you got work more than once. And what else? We've mentioned these things. It's not that they're really centralized. Yeah, these people are lacking things, but they're building things. We've mentioned a number of implements. The whip, a hammer, tongs, anvil, fire, cloth. Is cloth a tool? It's used for something, right? We have five kinds of cloth. Carpenter's tools, a house, a bridle. Tools and the needs they serve. Look at this cold figure. Are thematized here. Implements make a theme. Note the position of the hammer and tongs. But right in the corner there. You see, look at how they're laid out. It's almost like an emblem of a guild. If you know the stories of the gods as well as the Renaissance did, you will find that hammer and tongs suggestive. What trade do they belong to? The blacksmith. There was one god who worked, and he was a blacksmith. And he was Hephaestus. Hephaestus, Greek, Vulcan, Latin. Now, don't rush to say, oh, this is Vulcan. So don't shut the conversation down. The painting is actually titled by this museum, Vulcan and Aeolus. But don't be directed by the label. Hephaestus, who is Hephaestus? Brother of Athena, goddess of wisdom. The owl is her symbol. Hephaestus assisted at her birth by opening the head of Zeus with an axe. And notice that he uses an implement to open the head of Zeus, making wisdom possible. So again, you have mechanical arts preceding wisdom. So, and Athena sprang fully formed from the head of Zeus. Practical knowledge came ahead of wisdom. And note that, made wisdom possible. Who is Aeolus, the man with, he's got two leather bags he's using as bellows. You've read the Odyssey. Who's Aeolus? Man who gave a bag of wind to Odysseus. He was a human being who gave Odysseus a favorable wind and a bag in which to trap the unfavorable winds, but he was eventually considered a minor god. So you see Vulcan and Aeolus over there. So is this Vulcan and Aeolus? Is that what this painting is? Well, notice that many of the people are working. Did Vulcan live among working people? No. Work is a human thing. You have a Christian note in this picture. In this classical picture, and an echo of Genesis. Work is given to you by God, says Genesis, says Ecclesiastes. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, Genesis 3. Remember Shark with Adam digging and Eve spinning. In this world, which is not paradise, the expelled Adam and Eve have to work to live, right? Versus tending garden solely for the honor of God. That's the understanding of what they were doing before. They were not, they didn't have to work to survive. They tended the garden to the honor of God. So here we're looking at labor and technology in the story of the human race. Technology when it was still in unmitigated glory, right, for the betterment of mankind. Or you could say we have civilization. It can be defined in different ways. What is civilization? Well, you could say it's what manufactures your treasure. Well, where your treasure is, you know, what treasure you're talking about, there your heart will be. Civilization is what makes fantastic technology to stay in touch with friends at all times, play great games. Well, is that civilization? Here, it engages man in work that serves our most basic needs so that higher things, right, this is the note sounded by Vulcan, so that higher things might come of this. So this picture is much more than a picture of two gods, the birth of civilization in technology. Civilization is the man-made conditions in which man, in accord with his destiny, can thrive. So the classical thinking that had carried through to the Renaissance in harmony with Christianity. So a painting that honors techne. Where was such a picture hung? Why was it made? Probably painted for the study of a humanist who was a member of the Arte della Lana, the wool guild. We call it a guild. The Italians called it an arte, right? An art. Not meaning that even wool makers were artistic, but that the members of the wool guild had specialized knowledge that allowed them to produce fine cloth. And we see samples of it here. Remember that art is originally a kind of knowledge. Art is something a craftsman has, not something he makes. So this painting acknowledges the place in civilization of the mechanical arts. Right? You might have thought that in Florence, the center of humanism, where the liberal arts were lifted high, that mechanical arts would be downgraded. But you could see that they were not, because they're seen as part of a whole. Is there any face in this painting that stands out as different from the others? But Panofsky, Erwin Panofsky, knew this picture. He thought that there was that the owner of this painting had a portrait of himself on one of these figures. And it would be, I mean, logically speaking, you would think, who would it be? It would be Vulcan. It would be the most significant figure. And in fact, if you look at Vulcan, do you not have the sense that you're actually seeing a portrait in that face? Whereas, you know, here you've got a generalized man. Panofsky thought that this figure was the man who commissioned it. Vulcan was a portrait of Francesco del Pugliese, who was a Florentine defender of Savonarola. Pugliese was eventually banished from Florence for the usual reason, insulting the Medici. In his study, now think about why would he commission a painting like this? In his study, Pugliese could reflect on the order of his life. The way, looking at this painting, and he could reflect on the way in which his life was a part of civilization, right? The way in which his life in the Wool Guild fits the plan. And you will want to choose a profession or a trade in life. And it doesn't have to be something high-flown, right? You see that that's part of the idea here. That can be fit into this bigger picture of human life. You will want the satisfaction reflecting on your work that Pugliese had looking at this picture.